Hello, good evening, Om Shanti, and a warm welcome to everyone joining us on the webcast for this evening. It feels like family evening, Sunday evening, a get-together and a chit-chat. And it's an absolute honour and delight to have both Sudesh Didi and Jenti Ben join us for this evening's conversation. Welcome to both of you, and thank you both so much for your time and this sharing, this opportunity for us to ask you questions this evening. It feels a really special time this evening.
Thank you.
I've actually had questions coming in all day via email and text and WhatsApp, and a real sense of there being a lot of questions out there. So we're going to do our best to get through them. And I had a question actually that came through just about 10 minutes ago. So I thought, well, let's start with that question. And it's sort of touching on something you said this morning, Jenti Ben, about Sigrun in Iceland being omnipresent through her artwork that is just everywhere that you go. But it can also feel sometimes like you are also becoming omnipresent with the Zoom calls and conferences that you are doing. Never a day, really, never a moment seems to go by when you're not appearing somewhere in the digital world, sharing wisdom and offering support. And the question that came through was really about how do you do that? How do you keep going every day, getting up early, giving all day? And I know you were on a call with the Middle East earlier in the week, and they asked you a question. If you were given half a day to do with whatever you wanted, complete and utter freedom, what would you do? And you answered quick as a flash, I'd sleep. And I think we all absolutely loved you for that answer, because it was the honest answer, and we can all relate to it. And so what is that balance between seeing conquering sleep as part of conquering matter? And when does that tip over into not actually showing care and respect for the body and for the self, not showing the kindness to ourselves that we would perhaps show to others? How do you find that balance? And I guess we all want to know, what is your trick, and what do you do to get that strength?
Om Shanti to everyone, and thank you, Philippa, for making time to do this, because I know that you're in constant demand for the Brahman family for outside events. And again, the same applies to you. I know you're looking after a home, a family, and also doing all of these things. So thank you. And I think one particular thing I've learned is that I have to stop using Wi-Fi and devices and all those things, say, from around 8 o'clock in the evening, or even earlier if I can. And I found that that does actually make a physical difference to me. And so then the thing, the motivation that I have is that I received so much, from Baba, from Daddy Janki, but also through my whole life, through all the seniors. And so I just feel that I should be giving the return of that. And so if there's a possibility, then I'm going to say yes. I'm not going to say no. And if it's really impossible, then okay. But it's just a very powerful motivation that I have, because I just see how much abundance I have been blessed with. And so to have the thought of giving is just totally natural.
When those moments come where you think to yourself, I don't know where I'm going to find the energy from to do this next thing, but it's happening and I've got to do it, are you just drawing from your bank that you have built up over many years of energy reserve that you can draw on? And do you know when you're keeping that topped up and when it's getting depleted? Is that something that you monitor for yourself? Because we all want you to stay as perfectly healthy and omnipresent as you are. So it's a question out of selfishness, really, that we're asking this, because, you know, we want you to be well. And we want to know that you're monitoring that for yourself.
Yes, definitely. And when I do feel that I need to take a break, I'm not shy about saying that and just taking a break, taking an hour for myself so that then I can be fresh for whatever is to come further. Because the worst thing is where my head is heavy and I'm not feeling up to actually doing what is expected, I feel that it's not right. And so, yes, I do take that time when I do need it. Yeah.
Fabulous. So thank you for your loving concern. Well, sorry, gentlemen.
Thank you for your loving concern.
Yeah. Sudesh Didi, congratulations firstly, because you're celebrating your anniversary of arriving in London. How many years ago now was that? When you first arrived in London?
How many years? When was it?
How many years ago is it now since you first arrived in London?
I arrived in 1974, 11th of November. Came with that month, that January.
11th of November, so we're just coming up.
Yeah, just, yeah. Came at that
Just
time.
Coming up to that anniversary, yeah. And, you know, it's been our privilege in the UK to have you, Sudesh Didi, as you know, as close as you have been to the family and to our hearts. And I kind of speak for everyone who runs a centre in the UK who has experienced personally the nourishment from you, the love and care of a mother. You know, you have always been there and so generous with your time throughout all of those years. And I wonder what it is about double foreigners, about the UK, about Europe. What is it about us that you appreciate so much that has kept you here for all of these years? What qualities do you see?
The first thing, it was because Dadiji's, Dadi, Didi, and the family said that I should come to foreign land. Though I was not good in English, I had read, but I never spoke in India English. And I said, no, what will I do there? I don't speak English. And then Jagdish Bhai and Didi's, Dadi's inspired me. He said, no, Jagdish Bhai said, if you have read and I have seen you speaking as well, whenever in India there were some melas, some conference program, then some foreigners would come and then I would spoke broken English. And that's why he reminded me. He said, no, you should have courage. So, of course, it was initiation from them, inspiration. And it is Baba's blessing, actually. I remember in 1968, November, I was in Madhuban and Baba's was welcoming me, my lovely child, my rose flower has come. And I came to the train, I came late, and I came from the back door and sit behind, and Baba called me, come child, come in front. And at that time, he said, this child will go abroad, will do service, give a message to many, create many hundreds of air children, thousands and thousands, she will give message. At that time, I did not know what abroad. I knew only foreign country means England, Japan, America. That's right. But then so many places are here. It was Baba's blessing, actually, that became true in 74. An invitation came from London. And so at that time, I came. And because of love for Baba and service, and also the Dijanki's company, because every day we had sustenance, speaking, sitting together, reading only, Dadi will read notes to us, and small family, everything doing together. Wherever we went in the park, we went for a program, or we sat together, eat together. This spiritual company and Dadi's sustenance and joy just kept me here, and also my own enthusiasm to serve in unlimited consciousness. So I continue to wear.
But we as double foreigners like to think that it wasn't just the attraction of Daddy Janki that kept you here years. There was something about us as well. So can you give us any particular qualities that for you stand out for us as double foreigners here in the UK and Europe?
Of course, Daddy's love, Daddy's affection, Daddy's care, respect in my heart is, and the same love, respect is there. But there wasn't any kind of that attachment, because Daddy was also very strict. This was Daddy's speciality, not making us dependent. Regarding my teacher's qualities, actually, I was fond of teaching because Baba had given me a duty. Actually, this was also 69, November 19th, I remember very much. Baba was taking me around and showing the training center. And he said, child, this is going to become a Kumari's training center, and you have to give training there. I was not so capable. Of course, later on, Dadis and they became responsible, and I supported. And so it was Baba's blessing as well to create that kind of consciousness in me that I need to develop this quality, though my interest was in service and Murli has been always. But one thing, when I was
I was going to say, I'm sure that, you know, the proof of your devotion as a teacher is in the family that we see here today. And there's not a single soul that hasn't had that sustenance and that support and inspiration through your guidance. But before we get too stuck into our questions, I'd just like to pause for a moment and just look at the significance of the time that we are going through at the moment. We're less than 10 days now before we have the election in the United States. And that feels like it's going to be a momentous thing, whichever way the result goes. And then we had this message from Bapdada via Sister Mohini talking to us about Maya making a full attempt to create storms in various ways. And that felt like a bit of a warning. It also, in that message, talked about the boat of truth may rock, but it will never sink. And that felt like maybe we should start preparing ourselves for something coming along. And then this morning's message from Madhuban asking for us to give 15 minutes extra meditation, focusing on Madhuban. There is this sense of, are we being prepared for something? Is there going to be further opportunity for us to show how stable we are on drama? I wonder, Jenti Ben, what your sense is of the significance of this particular time within this year that has been significant and challenging. What do you feel we're now gearing up to?
I think we've been dependent on Madhuban a huge amount in a very positive way. So we look forward to going in October, whether it's February, March, or at whatever time. And I think we are being told now that wherever it is you are, you have to be able to create that link with Avyakt Bap Dada, and also to be able to fly to Madhuban just through the consciousness and experience the power of the vibrations that you would normally pick up if you were there physically. So I think that it's really a period in which Baba's preparing us that we're not going to be able to go to Madhuban this year. And then beyond that, who knows how, what, why things will develop. You know, with COVID, we first thought that by summer it would be all okay. Then we thought, well, by autumn it will be fine. Now the prognosis is that probably till next summer, things are going to carry on in some form or another. So the dates keep shifting, the goalposts keep shifting. And so I think that's going to be a major change in everybody's form. We are used to taking a lot of sustenance from Daddy, especially those in the UK. I know the rest of the world, Europe, etc., but UK has been very, very blessed and very lucky to have had that sort of sustenance. And so, again, we have to become avyakt. We can't have avyakt bhavdara come. We are not able to go to Dadi to take that sustenance. So I think that this is a very important factor where all the supports that we've had are gradually moving away. And so to what extent is it that I can be self-reliant? Can I just connect with Baba and take everything that I need from one? It's a training that Baba's been trying to give us for quite a space of time. But I think now, in a very practical, physical way, all those external supports are fading. And so we just have to be very, very strong. And yes, I also see that it's something that we're hearing about every day, certainly in the UK. As much as we hear about COVID, that's as much as we hear about the economy and the financial crisis. And so how am I going to be able to manage when all of that upheaval is happening? Am I stable enough to have everything cut away and have just the simple basics of life in which there isn't anything else except just the absolute essential support that I need to eat and drink and survive? Can I manage with that? Is my buddhi yoga, my connection of the intellect with Baba, so strong that I'm not distracted by anything at that moment? And so I think that this is a preparation for all of that.
There was a discussion after Murali one day, Sudesh Didi, when you were reading the Murali, and you were talking about, it was about Amba. The Murali point was about Amba and Jagadamba. And you were sharing with us how after when Mama left the body, it was such a seismic shock for everybody. And it was at that point that in the Murali, it started to be said that Brahma Baba, in many ways, was the mother, that we were the mouth-born progeny of Brahma Baba. So, yes, you've lost Mama, but Baba is also the mother. And it made me think about their loss at that time, but also about the loss that we have been through in recent times. You know, we've had the transition of getting used to avyakt bhavdara not coming in the way that he used to. We've then had the departure of Dadi Janki, which has been huge for all of us. We've then also had, because of COVID, not being able to go to the centres in the same way and get that support and that sustenance. And now we have not being able to go to Madhuban and get that support and sustenance. So it was really just acknowledging what a time of change it has been. And are we really getting a lesson now in one strength and one support? And we still have the support of Zoom calls and technology and media and all of that. But at some point, that will go as well. So how do we prepare for this time that is coming when we have to be giving visions of to the world of the angels having come at a time when we haven't got the supports that we're used to? Day-to-day life has become even more challenging than it has been before. And that's happening at the very moment when we're needing to step up and be examples in front of the world. How do we prepare for those coming days and months and years of really needing to shine and be strong when all those supports aren't going to be there? What would your advice be?
We have been preparing, actually. Baba has been preparing us for a long period of time. He gave many times signals. He gave, make us aware of that suddenly it will be exam of 1 second. There will be situation when people will really, scientists will come and they will search where this light is coming from. So it means that Baba has given us the aim now 40 years ago from the early Murlis that your state of a being soul conscious, embodiment of light, angelic consciousness for a long period of time. So what my feeling is that those who are for a long period of time, maybe all of us or some of us or many of us, not giving full attention to exactly giving very much time on this, focus on this. But what my feeling is that even if some souls have paid attention, revised the Murli, thought about it, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, this consciousness. So I, my feeling is it has planted a very powerful seed in our personality. And because it's not, we became busy on other activities. And so our attention, our capacity is being used on the, at that area. When that period will be there, we are more aware of long period of time preparing ourselves, maybe 10% a day or 2% or 1%. And in 40 years, 30 years, 20 years, those who Brahmins are there, even if it is a small percentage has been prepared, and faith and love with Baba is faith, this is unshakable. Love for serving service and uplifting the souls is there. And maintaining self-respect that now is the time that I have to give the proof of God is teaching me. So this consciousness, God is teaching me, and God is with me because I alone cannot give support to the souls. Baba is making me an instrument, and I am an instrument. So this consciousness, this surrender consciousness, love and benevolent consciousness, then some percentage we have, and my feeling is that will be connecting with Baba, and that time Baba will help. We ourselves will use our treasure store that we have stored for a long period of time. And now a short time is left. We are really aware that this is the final scene. It means our present conscious practice, invoking our angelic stage, making aware that now the power of silence is more powerful than the power of science. And so practicing already that somebody is in front of me and how I give drishti. Somebody is in front of me crying, what is my heart feeling at that time? So it is a rehearsal. If we begin to rehearse now, reality will help us to express this, our role, which is very near we have to play.
It does feel like we are at the beginning of that time when everything that Baba has been teaching us over all these years is really now going to be put into practice, and we will start to see actually what qualities we have, how stable we are, how we're able to cope, how we're still able to give, even though our own personal circumstances might actually be extremely challenging. You know, we have to really step up at this point. And the signals from Dharma is very clear that, you know, this time is for really anchoring yourself in your practice so that no matter what's going on for you, you will be able to maintain that. This is a little a side question, but it is related. You know, as the daddies, the ancestors, the seniors are now moving on to their next role. I know, Jenti Ben, when Daddy left, someone said to you that you were now beginning your new role because you were stepping into some aspect of Daddy's role. And your reply to that was very much that you don't see your role as changing at all, that you're just continuing with everything that you have always done. And yet, in our mind, we are now looking to the two of you in a slightly different way. And I think it's a natural process. You know, when the generation before move on, you then look to the next generation for that support, for that guidance, for that example. Is that a weakness? If we feel that we're not clinging on to you, but we're holding on to what you give us, Is that another sign that we're not becoming it yet for ourselves? And do you accept this? It's not attachment, it's pure love, but we need you to be there. Is that okay? And do you accept that role?
It's very difficult to fit into somebody else's shoes. And especially when it's been somebody like Daddy who's had such a huge, immense personality. You know, she walks into a room and instantly you can feel her presence. And so to have that expectation of anybody else, I think, is not right. Just like with Sakar Baba, we had wonderful daddies after Sakar Baba, but Sakar Baba was Sakar Baba. Daddy Kumarka wasn't Sakar Baba. Didi wasn't Sakar Baba. And yet, of course, they did amazing things. So in the same way, I absolutely reject from my heart the possibility that anyone can step into Daddy's shoes. And that applies to me or for anyone. But yes, I do realize the responsibility that I carry, which is why I said that I've had so much. And so that's the motivation for me to keep going and to keep sharing and doing however much I can. And so I understand the value of human company. I understand the value of spiritual company. And so I'm very willing to be part of that and support that. But that idea that anybody else can play that role for anyone, like with Adi Prakashmani, people said to Daddy Janki, are you now going to do what Daddy Prakashmani did? And she said, no, she had her own qualities and I have my own. And if I look at what Daddy Ji did, and then I look at what Daddy Janki did, it's different. But it was so important for Shantivan to have her for all these years and take that spiritual sustenance from her, because her speciality was giving gyan and yoga. Daddy Ji's was different, family and administration and so on. And Daddy was, again, very different. So I think we're all different, so you can't have that expectation. That's what my heart can't accept, that expectation to be put on anybody. But yes, definitely, I'm happy to be with the family, and I'm very aware of the need of that spiritual sustenance for everybody today. And so I'm very glad that COVID has kept Didi Suresh here with us. And so it's great having her here, because the family is big. Even with COVID, we still have full house in the morning class. We are lucky we have the facilities. So it's really very, very valuable. Drama is perfect. If I had tried to persuade Deshpan, please don't go back to Germany, I don't think my persuasion powers would have worked. But drama said, you can't go, finish, full stop, you have to stay here. So drama took care of it. So I'm very aware of the need for that spiritual sustenance and support. And that's fine. I don't have an issue with that at all.
And I suppose at the end of the day, we're in this together, which is a phrase that has been used in relation to COVID, but in relation to this journey of transformation that we're on, we're not doing this alone. You know, of course, Baba is there with us, but we're doing it together, and we need each other for that strength. And it's not strength and support, because that's coming from Baba, but the sense of camaraderie and togetherness. You know, we can play that part for each other, which is lovely. Just moving now through some of our questions. You were asked this week again in that session with the Middle East, Gentiben, about the importance of keeping a chart. And you spoke about your practice of really charting your stage of soul consciousness, and having had times in your life when you will write down at the end of every couple of hours what percentage of time you felt you had maintained a stage of soul consciousness. And there's a question that has come around what actually for you defines a moment of being in soul consciousness. Is it a moment where you are experiencing yourself as a point of light? Do you visualize a point of light? Is it a moment of feeling yourself slightly detached and seeing your body as separate, seeing your role as separate? Is it a moment from coming from a place of higher consciousness? and looking from a sort of subtle regions perspective. How do you judge when you have been in soul consciousness? Is it a particular visualization, a particular practice, or do you just have a sense of that?
It's not so much a visualization, more it's a feeling. And so I can feel, for example, now I can feel that I'm aware of the soul rather than the physical form. And so that's how I know that I am soul conscious, when I'm not caught up in the physical identity. And then it's a little bit of everything that you mentioned. And so, but first and foremost, is this feeling, this inner sense of who I am. And sometimes listening to people, making sure that I'm seeing them as a soul, just connecting with that inner being and not letting the external form distract me in any way. And sometimes people come with very sad stories. And so you have to be very, very strong and detached and hear that story and then try and help that individual. And so it's a variety of all of these things. Sometimes it is really just stepping away and above and seeing what's going on down below. But sometimes it's just very simply this awareness, this feeling that it's the inner being that I am and I'm listening. And sometimes it's actually visualizing Baba between me and the other individual. So that then, and that's especially when it's difficult situations with people that I know is going to be very challenging. And so very consciously keeping Baba between me and them. So it's a variety of different things. And I think it's good to just keep that day's Murali in mind and then experiment with the ideas that Baba's given in that day's Murali, because it makes it constantly fresh so that then there isn't a moment of getting bored with something. Because I know that if you do the same thing over and over again, it might be helpful at the beginning, but you might get a little bit jaded later on. But if it's something that's fresh, that's come from the Murali, like today I found that definition that Baba gave of renunciation, and renunciation, Baba just said, is humility. And yes, of course, when you've let go of all the externals, and then finally you're understanding that what you have to let go is of your ego, then opposite of that is humility. So I love it when Baba gives us definitions that you can use immediately in that way. So for me, the practice of soul consciousness is using something that Baba has said and practicing it that day.
And keeping that feeling with you. And I guess you know when you've fallen out of a soul conscious state is when you begin to get caught up in the drama of what's happening around you and it begins to become more important than perhaps it should. You've lost that detachment. That's interesting. Would you have anything to add to that, Sudesh Jiddy, in terms of for you, how you would know that you have been in soul consciousness? Is there a particular way you have of knowing that?
Time to time, I check myself, and especially when there is a situation in conversation, am I detached? And is my inner feeling, internally, I'm happy inside. And I feel myself that it is Baba is with me. That feeling is just, sometimes it's not a visualizing or vision. But I feel very much that any time when I am soul conscious, the vibrations I feel, my heart is very happy. And my feeling is giving satisfaction to me. And also when I am communicating with others, I also feel Baba is in front and I am behind. And sometimes I visualize Baba is behind, giving them power and using me as a mic, instrument to speak. So consciously, when I am keeping this consciousness, Baba is with me, the feeling is different. And also my reaction and interaction is with joy and satisfaction. And also when I'm meeting others, I am, at that time, I consciously have this conscious that Baba's children and I am meeting the souls. Though I don't see the soul, but I know I am meeting the souls, I'm speaking to the souls. So reminding myself again and again, it is still not natural like in the golden age it would be. But I feel that it is becoming a practice of connecting with my original qualities.
I think that's a lovely yardstick, you know, because if we're experiencing happiness and joy and peace, you know, those original qualities of the soul, then that's a pretty good indication that we are in that awareness of soul consciousness. And that brings us on to happiness, which is another question that came up in your session with the Middle East, Jenty Ben. You were asked what it was that you most missed about Daddy Janki. And your answer was that she brought with her so much laughter. And there was a quality of Daddy that you just had to be in her presence and you felt enormous lightness. She was like a child in that she loved humour, she loved laughter, and she brought that laughter. And it's a sort of reminder with all this that's going on in the world around at the moment, what you feel the importance is of laughter and lightness and humour. Is it wrong to want to experience those qualities when there is so much suffering going on in the world around us? And now that Daddy isn't with us, what is your sense of how we can keep the laughter and humour alive on our Brahmin journey? Where is that going to come from now?
I think it has to come from all of us. We're not going to be able to just depend on old videos. So I must say that yesterday I was with a group of people who put together Ubuntu, the Oneness Program, and that was really lovely, even though I joined it for a short while. And I mentioned something about Daddy in that program. Daddy's sort of ever-present, so of course I mentioned her. That's right, I mentioned her in the context that she was always there for the Caribbean programs and so on. And today somebody sent me a little video clip, just a few minutes, in which Daddy was dancing to reggae music. And it's so full of life and Daddy's joy and ability to just be happy and share that happiness. And so this was Daddy. But we have to be the same also. And no, I don't think it's wrong that at a time when on the one side there's a lot of suffering going on, but if I cry when I see others cry, then I'm not helping them. I'm not helping myself or them. But if I can make them smile, make them laugh also, then I've done them a service. And so it means that I have to have a stage in which I am above that sorrow and I'm not laughing at them. I think there's a big difference there. I'm inviting them to laugh with me. I'm inviting them to smile and see something beautiful in life, to see something that's going to make them happy also. So I think it's important that all of us together have to create that.
And find new ways of creating that. So we're touching on happiness, and there's a question that has come in around our transition to the land of happiness. Sort of some quite detailed questions really around how that transition exactly is going to take place. And I know there's an element of mystery around it that we don't necessarily know in detail. But Baba has made a promise that he will be with us until the end, which in the minds of some means that, you know, Krishna can't be born until that time of going back to the soul world is with us. So if that is the case, then there's going to be a gap between that moment and Krishna being born and the arrival of Lakshmi and Narayan. There's a question around the 900,000 that are there at the beginning of Satyug, which is the day of the coronation. And does Krishna come with friends and companions from other places to arrive in a transformed Delhi? that the scientists are going to be constructing whatever they need to construct for the beginning of the Golden Age. And that all this is going to be happening in a flash as well. So could you talk us through how you see that transition in terms of exactly how this is going to play out?
Baba has not spoken about it. And it can be many different opinions, many different feelings about Krishna coming. But my personal feeling is that, in fact, while Brahma Baba was in this corporeal form, his consciousness was so elevated, he was so connected with his future, that it is just like, at this moment, Krishna will not come with a crown, or will not come with a ready-made beautiful dresses. God does this, breaking the laws of nature. System will be same like the other children are born. Krishna will be also born through his parents. And as we are not aware, the time period, so we cannot say that how many years are there going to be that when Sri Krishna will be present there. But of course, the advance party, which has been gone have started going for a long time now, so those souls are creating a kind of community, a divine community, or not with the name of divine community or elevated community, their personality attracting each other are creating a network together. And so these souls are, as Baba said, the birth will be with the power of yoga, and that would be first. It means people have to be here. Krishna cannot be the world of new age, cannot be the world of babies. It is the world of people, mature people, or youngster age. All age people must be there to continue the system of the society, of the world of nature. And so if this consciousness has taken birth already when Baba was in the physical form. And then this bhakti example, that suddenly when there was annihilation, destruction took place, Krishna came on sucking his thumb on a peepal leaf, first leaf. So it means that vision of Sri Krishna we will have, realization of Sri Krishna we will have that time when all souls are of the same elevated consciousness. And I don't think that now we have all, even Brahmins, are with that complete purity and consciousness. And old bodies, advanced party, is also not with a perfect body matter. So there has to be a sudden, subtle shift in matter, huge with transformation, and also shift in our consciousness, those who will be living here with the body. And so how it will take place, I do not know. But I know that this realization that Krishna takes birth will at that time will be touched by, will others will have that experience and it will be known to everyone. But at the moment, I don't have any answer because Baba has not given. And it would be again our imagination, our calculation. And another aspect, I see that God does not have time. He is beyond time. And in his world, there's no time calendar. He comes only here in the world of time where sun and moon is there. And so he is giving time according to perhaps his time, short time, few years. His few years can be many years for us. This is, we have seen example of us. Our concern must be that I become perfect like Sri Krishna So it means I have to follow in the footsteps of Baba and Mama so that I can be very close, and then I will recognize, oh, this is the soul of Sri Krishna, because I would be also taking birth at the same time when Krishna is taking birth. So our infinity will give the feeling of Krishna is here, but not in a decorative.
Relating to this as well, I know Jenti Ben, you have talked about feeling Daddy very strongly since she passed over. And, you know, I think it's no coincidence that since Daddy left, we've had this explosion of world consciousness. The Brahmin family has sort of reinvented itself as this sort of online, virtual, worldwide community. And, you know, we feel more in touch with people from the other side of the world. Charlie was giving a talk in Manchester yesterday, for example. It seems that Daddy's global vision has really manifested in the Brahmin family since she left. And of course, that has coincided with COVID as well. But it suggests that once a soul has moved on into their new birth, there is an aspect of them that is still operational through the subtle regions. And Brahma Baba, you know, in the subtle regions emerges souls that have long since gone, and they're suddenly there. Does that ring true for you, that a soul can be in their next birth, and yet because the subtle regions are beyond time and space, that a soul can still be operational on that subtle plane, even once they have moved into their new body? Is that how you see it work? And is it possible, therefore, that Brahma Baba will do the same thing, that he may have already begun his experience in the physical form as Krishna, but on the subtle plane can still be there?
There was a very specific message that came from Daddy Gulzar, from Baba, in the first 13-day period when bhog was being offered every day in Madhupan in 1969. And all that is documented somewhere. So it was either Baba coming every day, or it was a specific message that Daddy Gulzar brought. And one of the messages that came was very specific, in that she saw this wheel of time moving, and souls were coming and joining everything within this wheel. And at a certain point, one soul left the cycle of drama and moved into the subtle region. And the message was that the soul of Brahma Baba is now not part of the cycle of birth and death, but has moved into the subtle region and is waiting for all of you, and is working from the subtle region, and then with all of you will travel home, and then will come again. So I somehow have that embedded in my heart and my feelings. Now, these are not things that I can prove to anybody, but certainly my understanding and my feeling is very much that. And when the other day Baba spoke about how there are the children who have been born through the mouth of Brahma, the deities took birth, and so there are the mouth-born progeny, the Brahmins, but there's also the ones born through the thought of Brahma. And so the thoughts of Brahma were there right from the days of Karachi, and especially then in India, the early days in the 50s. Think about how many Brahmins you know who've talked about having seen an image of Baba. They didn't recognize who it was, but a figure in white who came to them. I can remember several who've talked to me about experiences like this. So there was Brahma Baba in the Sakar form, but he was remembering the children abroad. And so at that time, and for me, the date is very, very clear. Baba ascending in January 69, Baba sending me back home to my home in London, though I was kicking and screaming. And I came back in June 69. The first delegation came in June 71, and world service started. Literally, it was like Baba went into the subtle region, and the thought was, okay, now this is the work I have to do. And so it was a very active period in which then through the 70s and 80s, amazing things were happening. Then the 90s, of course, also. But how do you explain the expansion of an organization that charges no money, that had two old women at their leadership in India and one old woman outside India who spoke no English, and yet within the space of 40 years, we had established centers in 120 countries. It just wasn't human energy. It really wasn't. It was God's power and Brahma Baba's power working from the subtle region. So for me, there's ample evidence that it's not human energy, but it's energy from above. Baba, Shiv Baba, of course, but also Brahma Baba, the angel, establishing everything and making all this happen. It just could not have happened otherwise. So for me, it's not just an idea, but it's a reality that Brahma Baba is working from the subtle region. And then since that has become avyakt, I've seen the sort of thing that you're talking about, this worldwide interaction and community that's going on. You know, now I'm in three continents in the day, in Sudesh Pen also. So it's just happening like this in a very powerful way. But for me, there's a very interesting coincidence. The day I was speaking to Australia, I was reading, it was nighttime here, I think it's, I remember the date, 13th of October evening here, 14th October morning in Australia. And it was a date, Murali, so it wasn't one that I'd selected. And it happened to be one about the birth of Krishna. And Baba's very, very categorical in that, that the birth of Krishna only takes place when the world is completely clean. So this is why there's that bhakti image of the ocean completely clean, a new beginning. And so no impure soul is around when Krishna takes birth. And so, yes, you won't use the word Satyug till later, but the world has been cleansed. And then Baba was very explicit about the first yogi birth through the advanced party souls is the birth of Krishna. And then, of course, it heralds the beginning of many others also, because it's not just 20, 50 people who are in the advanced party now, but just from London. If you look at, when I look at the auditorium, when it used to be full, I know the people who were sitting in the front row were all gone. And they were very powerful yogis, but also the same many, many other places. And so, and we would say that they're all advanced party souls, not just one or two of them, but most of them, because they had those yogi qualities. So there's a whole army in the advanced party waiting for that moment when we're ready, when things go click and there's the turbulence and the upheaval, we go home and a new world begins. And a comment that Dadi Gulzar has made, and it's a fact that when we asked her about, well, how does Satyug come? And she didn't get into any logistical details. She was quiet and she said, it happens in a flash. She used this word, in a flash. And so the interpretation of this could be many different things. But for me, it means that it's not a long, drawn-out space. It could be, maybe it is, but what it's saying to me is that there's the huge upheaval in which there's the transition and the memorial of Shiva and the procession of Shiva going home. So that happens. Baba's categorically stated that when we're Brahmins are settling their accounts with Dharamraj, the feeling is of many, many births. But in terms of time, it'll be a flash. It won't be, you know, I've gone through 63 births in which there's been all sorts of karma. And I'm not going to settle that taking 2,000 years to settle. It'll happen like this. So there's still a lot to be settled, but it'll happen fast. And so the transition also from the old to the cleansing and the new, it'll happen very fast in a way that at this moment, we don't understand. I remember Dadi Gulzar had come to London for the first time in 1976. In fact, it was her first time apart from Nepal, coming outside India. And we somehow had this idea that there should be an exhibition in Olympia. And the one we were finding what exhibitions were going on, and it was a bit of a long stretch of the imagination, but there was a publications exhibition happening in Olympia. So we thought, okay, we do publishing. We didn't have a single book in English properly done here, but it was a publications thing. And so they gave us space. They believed us. They trusted us. They gave us space, and we had the exhibition there. And I took Tari Kulsar because she was curious to know what is Olympia, how does it work. And so I took her there. And what they were doing was setting up the exhibition hall. And if you've ever been in these places, it's just empty, empty, big, big hall. And then within a few minutes, one person will come, another one will come. Somebody will put up the walls, somebody will put up the lights, somebody will put down the floor. And a stand is ready within the space of half an hour. How do they do this? You know, quick. They know what they're doing. They set it up. And so she stood there watching them do all of this. And she said, well, this is what I've seen in Satyug. Calluses go up like this. And I've always wondered, how do they do it so quickly? But I'm seeing that this is Kaliyug, and they've got all these gadgets and things, and they're able to do it so quickly. And so surely, of course, in Satyug, it'll all happen like this. It was fascinating watching her face as she watched these workmen do all of this. So from Dadi Kulsar, we get little snippets like this of things that she's seen in trance and comes back and relates to what's going on here. So that was a very interesting moment.
And we need to move on to another topic, but as far as souls who are in the womb or in their next birth, do you feel they can still be present in their Brahmin life in the subtle region, in their Brahmin form in the subtle regions? Is time so elastic that that is possible?
Yes, and when Brahma Baba was Sakar, Baba would say to the trans messengers, go up and tell me what is the state of my angelic form and what is the difference between my stage here and my stage there. Come back and tell me. And so while he was here, that angelic form existed. And so proof that the physical body is here, the soul is here, but there's something subtle happening up there.
So do we each have our perfect form in the subtle regions at this moment? Is it true for all Brahmins?
It is there. There are Muralis, Avyakt Muralis, that tell us this. Your subtle angelic form is waiting for you in the subtle region. What you have to do is slip out of this costume and take on your sparkling dress. You heard these Muralis. So all I have to do to emerge that awareness and take that on. It's there waiting for me. And you know, when we keep looking at our weaknesses and our defects and we get stuck with all of that, then we read one of these Muralis, we hear one of these Muralis, and it lifts our consciousness to that stage and we think, you know, where was I before? And this is Baba's magic, and this is the magic of the Murali, and why we need to hear the Murali every single day.
Totally. So you mentioned the Strengthening Ubuntu event yesterday, which I was also part of, and it was fabulously enriching and inspiring. And along with COVID in 2020, we have had this parallel theme running of righting the wrongs connected with colonialism, with slavery, with the killing of George Floyd in America, and it triggered a whole global awareness that led to worldwide marches. It led to statues being taken down if they had any links with slave trading. It really seems like we are entering a time when the karma connected with the experience of souls in black bodies is really coming up for healing in quite a profound way. And of course, in the Yagya, we have really led the way in terms of sexual equality and the rights of women and seeing men and women on a really equal basis. But maybe there is still a bit of a journey for us to go on in terms of as ancestor souls leading the way in really seeing beyond the skin colour of that someone is in. And, you know, it's a subtle issue. It's a deep issue. It's an issue that people feel very, very passionate about. And every country in the world has its own struggle with this, no matter the colour of skin that you're in. And I know in India, there is within the continent of India, there is a north-south sort of paler skin, darker skin way of seeing souls, and how that then possibly translates into the Brahmin family as well. I wonder, Jenti Ben, if you feel that there is still a way to go as an institution in really looking at this issue of race awareness. Because, you know, we are the ancestor souls, and in Golden Age, we are completely one. And yet we need to really model that ourselves in showing how this is possible in a practical way. What is your sense when you look around the world at how this issue is playing out and how it shows up in the Brahmin family?
I think it's absolutely right that we look at this, because there has been, even within the Brahmin family, where we are taught about soul consciousness and we practice soul consciousness, I believe that subtle discrimination has been happening, and sometimes maybe not so subtle. And so it's good that you raise this question, because it's a whole process of education. And I think also just getting to know each other more and more deeply. And one of the things that has been happening is where people come together in groups to talk about these issues. I know that there was a small group that started here in Global House last year or maybe the year before, and they explored it and they wanted to extend that conversation. And then, of course, COVID threw everything out of balance, and I don't think that group is meeting at the moment, but I do hope that, again, we can begin those conversations so that we can truly have that vision of equality. There's always examples that are very beautiful and are an exception to the rule, but they're an exception to the rule in a sense. And here in London, we've been very lucky. We've always had people of different colour who've had wonderful yogi lives and characters, and so they've been very much part of our community and doing beautiful service within the community. You saw some of them in the programme yesterday. But for there to be a general shift of consciousness and awareness is different, that still has to happen. And I think we're working on it, and it's happening slowly.
That's good to hear, because one of the points that someone wrote to me about was really how subtle that sense goes for an individual who is in a different coloured skin, that the need for a sense of belonging is for every individual really profound. And if you show up in a gathering and there is, even on a subtle level, a sense that you don't quite belong here because your skin colour or because you're from another community, the effect that that has is that it pushes individuals back into their cultural family, their family from the country of their origin, because they're looking for a sense of fitting in, for a sense of belonging. And they don't necessarily want to do that, but they don't feel that they quite fit, they quite belong in the Brahmin family. So, you know, this is, for many souls, I think, you know, this is an issue that runs very deep. You know, and even within the Indian community, there are different communities, and there can be a sense of, you know, this one is part of that community, this one is part of the other community, and, you know, and as a white Westerner, you're not part of any of those communities. And how to really move beyond that consciousness of you know, which Indian community you're part of, which black community you're part of, which white community you're part of, and feel that we are truly one family, we are truly belonging to one community, and we have a sense of really this is my right to be here and I do belong. What would you see as being the next steps that we could take towards showcasing that consciousness in front of the eyes of the world? What needs to happen?
I think just to be very aware of making that inclusion continually happen. So whether it's in teaching, whether it's in cooking, whether it's in any of the activities that happens in Baba's home, the more inclusive we are and we have that awareness of inclusion, the more that atmosphere will spread. And I think that that's how things can change. And so definitely things have shifted from what they were. But I think that the more we begin to do this and continue to do this, the more easily it will happen. And yes, it's absolutely vital that each one of us knows that whatever little reactions we have to sort out our own reactions and make sure that our hearts are open so that others can feel that they can belong. And, you know, 10 people can have that awareness of keeping an open heart. But if one person doesn't have that, then the person who's different is going to feel that reaction from that one person, and it's going to feel very hurtful, and it's going to take them away again. And so it's not the task of one, it's all of us together. As I say, you know, 10 people can be absolutely okay with everything, but one other individual maybe isn't okay, and the other person will feel that vibration. And it'll be a reaction again. And so I think it's really something for all of us to be totally aware of and have very, very conscious understanding of what can happen and what it is that Baba wants. Because this isn't just something in terms of what the world is demanding. It is actually what Baba wants for us. Baba wants us to be one family, one community. And Baba doesn't want us to be divided in any way at all. So, you know, Baba used to say in the early days when we started using this term double foreigners, Baba would say that you're my children, but yes, you've come from a different land. And so I'm acknowledging that also. I'm not ignoring that. And so for lack of a different term, Baba then used the word double foreigners. And that meant that everybody was a foreigner, not just the double foreigners, yet the double foreigners, it was double, but everybody is a foreigner here. So Baba tried as much as possible, Avyat Baba, to bring everything into that oneness and cohesion. And I think that we have to remember that that's what Baba wants. It's not just what other people are saying should happen, but it is actually what Baba wants.
And it's the Is it the right thing to point out if someone makes a comment or demonstrates an attitude that isn't as inclusive as we would like it to be? Should we draw attention to that? Or do we risk being sort of ostracized for seeming to be pointing out where there might be an attitude that needs to shift?
No, I found that there was one particular individual who kept making us aware of the divide. And so we recognized that. She would point out that, you know, when this happened, did you see the impact of that? And so over a period of time, it's worked. We are now more aware of it. And so it is important to point out, not in any name and shame way, because that doesn't serve any purpose, but gently to point out to the person who's made that error. And I think
I was just actually wanted to add in this, Miss, that our whole foundation is the truth. We are a family. A seed is one. We are actually part of the same tree. It's a human world tree. And certainly in the same tree, there are different branches, there are different flowers, individual, but size is different, shape is the same. Each leaf, though it looks like the same, but still every leaf, the way it's bending, and every leaf is small or big. So the acceptance and appreciation, both these qualities are very important, that each one develops this in self, explores belonging to the same tree. The moment it comes, the culture and the color and the community, we become body conscious. And then we are, of course, this is infinity with everyone, because children will like to play with the children. Elderly would like to sit with the elderly. Youngsters will like to play with youngsters. This is common. But when we create this discrimination, that it means we are going away from the teachings that Baba is teaching, that we are souls and we are have different costumes to play different roles. So not this is not only knowledge, but it is the reality that we need to, in each individual brings this consciousness and remove the inferiority and superiority conflicts. Complex. Sometimes it is complex of your own side. No matter how much you are giving that infinite feeling, a very loving feeling, very loving oneness, but it is not that kind of self-respect is there, that to accept that. Still, old consciousness pulls some souls back. Exactly like in a family, in a Laukic family, we see there are four children. Mother is loving with the same intention, same food, same care. But one would always complain that I am not loved. I am not cared. I don't feel belonging. So some souls will complain this. But as a general consciousness, of course, those who are experienced of the emotions, reactions, the feeling of sadness inside, then when we begin to work on that, it means understanding the heart of other souls with heart, not only with intellect. The moment we begin to use our intellect and make the plan, still we keep limited and so become limited. That is what the root is, that go to the roots and being connected with the same tree, and the seed is one for all of us. There was one project we made, one God, one world, one family. And so in variety in family.
That's a beautiful point to draw our conversation to a close this evening, that, you know, in the spaciousness of the heart, there is room for everything, and, you know, all are welcome and all are together, and we are all one, as was the theme of the Ubuntu event yesterday. There are more questions, which we've run out of time for, so I hope we can get a chance to maybe do this again another time. It's been fabulously rich. We've actually covered a lot of ground. And, you know, it's great to just have a chance to really have some real depth churning around these issues that we're all thinking about, and probably more so as time goes on. But we do have to draw it to a close there for today. But I'd like to thank you both so much for your wisdom, for your sharing, for your presence, and for being there in our lives. We get so much from having the two of you there, and together we will emerge in our perfect forms, and that's our journey that we're on together, and you have been such an important part of helping all of us see that and become that. So it would be nice just to close with a few moments of meditation, and wish everyone a wonderful rest of the evening and a sweet sleep. And we will be together in the subtle regions, and we'll hopefully meet again in the physical form in this way another time before too long. So bless you, and thank you both so much.
Thank you, Philip, for really setting the scene so beautifully. Much appreciation.
Absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
Yeah.